From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire restaurants are hoping for better days this spring and summer, with warm weather encouraging outdoor dining and more vaccinations making it safer to eat indoors. Yet the near future might be tricky with the lifting of New Hampshire's statewide mask mandate and changes to which guidelines are mandatory. Today in The Exchange, we look ahead at the Granite State's restaurant industry. And Exchange listeners, let's hear from you. Do you work in this sector of our economy? What's your experience been over the past year? What are your hopes moving forward? And if you're a loyal patron of your local eateries, how are you interacting with them? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 800-892-6477. Our guests are Nimi Adnani. She's the proprietor of Rally Wine Bar and Eatery in Portsmouth. Nimi, a big welcome back. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for having me on, Laura.
Also with us, Lisa Adams. She's Associate Dean for Global Health, a professor of medicine and epidemiology at Dartmouth College, and co-chair of the college's COVID Task Force. And Professor Adams, good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Nice to be with you this morning.
And also with us is Liz Jackson, co-owner of Salt and Libby's in Gorham. And Liz, big welcome back to you too. Thank you. Liz, are you there? Okay, we will wait for Liz to join us. Both of you, let's start with the latest news. The governor lifted New Hampshire's mask mandate and said that by early May, other restrictions will no longer be mandatory, including indoor capacity limits. Nimi, how does this affect your planning for the spring and summer?
So in Portsmouth, we still have a mask mandate, at least until the end of June, and hopefully even longer. It's been putting up a lot of extra signs, make sure our staff is ready to talk to guests about having their masks. The distancing in Portsmouth is still in effect. In Portsmouth, that's more than 6 feet between tables. It's usually 7.5 feet, kind of depends on the direction people are sitting. So that kind of stays all the same for us. I really don't foresee, at least in Portsmouth, that this changes until at least the end of summer.
Interesting. And what was your reaction, Nimi? I'm just curious, as a business owner, to the lifting of the statewide mask mandate. We did a whole show on this yesterday and we heard from lots of business owners.
Yeah, I don't think myself or my staff was very pleased with it. Already this past weekend, we had to talk to multiple guests about having a mask. We have to start giving out masks again because people are walking in without even having one.
Okay, and Professor Adams, you helped Dartmouth College deal with its dining halls throughout the past year. Not an easy job, I can imagine. What factors did you have to consider for dining at the college?
Well, certainly a lot of the factors that every dining establishment has had to consider. And I will tell you, I dining is tricky because we know that people are going to be unmasked while they're eating. So that is a given that there will be some unmasked time during dining. And distancing was really important. And I had to take a tour of the dining facilities with the director of dining and be the one to say, these booths are not far enough apart. So as lonely as it sounds, we can only sit one person at each booth. The tables, we could have some flexibility so that the people could have a little bit of distance. As we all know, we had a lovely fall, beautiful weather. And what we saw was students taking their meals and going sitting outside on the green. And I am a big fan of outdoor dining. And now again, hopefully the weather will be warming up so we can start doing that again.
Well, and as an epidemiologist, Professor Adams, just quickly remind us how the virus spreads indoors and what the indoor versus outdoor equation is, how we sort of sort that out.
Yeah, so we know that transmission does happen, of course, indoors, and just that outdoor transmission is just not that common, right? And when it does happen, it tends to be associated with close contact, unmasked close contact for a prolonged period of time. But really, the data seem to suggest that globally, less than 10% of COVID cases occurred during outdoor contact. So that's really reassuring for being outdoors. Indoors, it is quite dependent on ventilation capacity. And so Certainly at Dartmouth, and I think a lot of restaurants as well have sort of assessed their ventilation dynamics. And we're really looking for something between, you know, 4 to 6 air exchanges per hour, which is quite a bit, and not, you know, most buildings aren't really built for that. And so again, trying to find places that are safe to eat with the most air exchange, but really the best place for air exchange is outdoors. The outside provides the perfect ventilation, and any virus particles are rapidly dispersed when you're outdoors. So again, a big fan of outdoor dining.
So, Nimi, how did you work with outdoor dining over this past year, and especially in the wintertime? I'm wondering if you put up heaters or if you just said, forget it, Nimi.
Yeah, we bought quite a few heaters, and we kept our outdoor dining till the end of the year last year. So through December 31st, we had outdoor dining. We were closed for January and February, partially because, you know, it's just too cold for outdoor dining in those months in New Hampshire. But we reopened in the middle of March with our outdoor dining. And I will say, through the end of December, and even when we opened in early March, when days were still cold, every single day we've had at least somebody sit outside, other than huge storm days.
Wow. So, and what do people think about it, Nimi? I'm just curious. Do they say, hey, I'm cold, I want to come in, or?
Most people love it, and they come prepared, which is, I think, the big key. They come with many layers, extra jackets and blankets. And they sit by a heater. The one bad part about the good part and the bad part about our restaurant is we do have a decent amount of space for outdoor dining, but it is kind of in an open area right next to the bridge and the river. So there is a good bit of wind. So it does require being prepared.
Oh, sure. And a little bit later in the show, we'll talk more about just how cities and towns have had to work to help their local restaurants offer more outdoor options. Liz Jackson is with us. And Liz, I wanted to ask you just first of all, your reaction to the recent news that New Hampshire's statewide mask mandate is lifted. And by early May, as you know, other restrictions will no longer be on the books. How does this affect what you're thinking about, Liz, for the spring and summer?
Two things. One, we were horrified that Governor Sununu did this, but it doesn't change anything that we're going to do. So we are staying focused on outdoor dining until we feel that the majority of the people have been vaccinated and our staff and our customers can be safe. And we're still going to require masks, just as we did last year when we were open. So I think for the most part, it doesn't change anything for us, except for that we hope that we don't have arguments with people about masks. So.
Yeah, and Nimi told us that Portsmouth is keeping its mask mandate, along with Keene, Concord, Nashua, some other cities and towns. How about Gorham, Liz? Have you heard anything yet?
Yeah,
I'm guessing they're not going to stick with it.
Yeah, so I haven't heard much on that. So that would be a good question for me to ask today. So,
okay. Well, it's all still so new. Well, we did hear from listeners about this. Jerry emailed, I believe that it is unconscionable, Jerry says, that Sununu has shifted the mask mandate from the state, where it carries enforceability, to business owners who will now be forced into confrontations with anti-maskers. Liz, did you have confrontations with people last year?
In the beginning, we did. In the beginning, we had people that were acting a little bit defiantly. After they were seated, they would refuse to put their masks on when they left, or they would refuse to put their masks on when they went to the restroom. So we had a little bit of that in the beginning, but I think that we quickly weeded the people that were anti-maskers out of the equation. They seemed to either start to accept it or stop coming. I don't know which it was, but they were greeted with a welcoming sign that said that it was masks were required. And so I don't know if that changed their minds and they turned around. But we are all concerned, and we think it's very sad that Governor Sununu would put that onto the workers. And I more worry about big places like Walmart and, you know, the big, busy, busy places that deal with lots of people every day, that it's just not fair to do that.
Well, in terms of people walking away, if they have to wear a mask or not coming, we got an email from Susan who says, I'm fully vaccinated, but will continue to wear a mask as recommended by the CDC. I don't understand the governor's decision to seize preventive measures while cases are rising. Susan says, we've gotten takeout at least once a week from local restaurants, but if they choose to open to full capacity and maskless dinners, we will not even go in for takeout. So that's from Susan. I want to remind our listeners that we are talking about New Hampshire's restaurant industry today, their plans, their hopes, their innovations after all they've been through over the past year. And listeners, let's hear from you. If you are a regular patron, how have you been interacting with your local restaurants? And if you own a restaurant or work in one, what are your plans? What are your hopes for spring and summer? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call, 800-892-6477. Again, 800-892-6477. You know, Professor Adams, you talked earlier about airflow, and we hear from a lot of businesses, not just restaurants these days, about, you know, our double, triple, quadruple cleaning protocols, and look at all our plexiglass, and we're wiping everything down every 30 minutes. How helpful is this really, Professor Adams, in terms of preventing the spread of COVID?
So the data are really showing us now that there's really not much risk from surfaces as we originally feared and worried. And I always thought that makes perfect sense. The fact that our supermarkets were not the super spreader moments and or events, it makes perfect sense, right? That it's really not transmitted through surfaces. So, you know, I think cleaning, of course, and disinfecting at some regular frequency makes sense. And the CDC has adjusted their guidelines on how frequently disinfecting and cleaning has to happen. You know, the plexiglass, if it does interrupt airflow, possibly, but I really think that, again, it comes down to ventilation when you're talking about spending time indoors. Again, cleaning and disinfecting, always a good thing, but with the new CDC guidelines on reduced frequency required for that, I think, again, we're seeing that we're talking about airborne transmission and not contact transmission.
Let's take a call. Again, our number, 800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Jeff's calling from Nashua. Hi, Jeff. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning, Laura. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question, a comment, I guess. And what it is when I used to go to a restaurant or even a bar, sometimes I'll stop for lunch or something like that. During the time of the pandemic, I noticed a certain percentage of customers, those that will walk in wearing a mask. But once they're seated, okay, once they take the mask off, instead of putting it away, they would leave the mask open end on either the bar or the table, face up. And I don't feel very comfortable with that. When I used to do, I put it in my pocket myself, but I was kind of wondering, you and your guests, could that be a sort of a contributing factor to maybe a slight increase in COVID cases or something? You know, I was kind of wondering about that.
Oh, that's interesting. So, Jeff, like absorbing some possible virus because that might be in the air because the mask is sitting there on the bar of the table. Is that what you're saying?
I thought about that a lot. I was kind of wondering. I wanted to get your guys' take on it anyway. So just
thanks for calling, Jeff. That's why we've got Professor Adams with us. Go ahead, Professor Adams.
Yeah. So it's a very good question, and I think when we think of masks, right, we think of the side that's facing the outside. Is the side that's sort of exposed to the virus. And so when we've talked about, you know, putting masks down on a surface, you want to put it down so that the clean side, the side that's on your face, is facing up and not in contact with the surface. So I guess that part makes sense to me. And as long as the surface is being wiped afterwards when you put it down so that the quote unquote dirty side is down on the surface, that is probably safe. But I think you're right, sort of folding it, putting it, you know, in your bag, on your lap is probably the safest thing we can do when you're talking about being in a shared space. I will also say too, I have seen this as well. I heard about this, that people walk in with a mask on, and as soon as they sit down, off comes the mask, even though they're looking at the menu or they're talking. And I am really a fan of, let's keep that mask on until you need to take it off, until you need to actually be eating or drinking. There's really no reason to, once you sit down, and especially when you're ordering with your wait staff, you should be wearing your mask at that time too. So again, just some other reminders for stay masked for as long as possible when you are indoors.
Jeff, thank you for calling. And let's take another caller. This is Jeff in Jackson. So another Jeff. Go ahead. You're on the air, Jeff.
Hi. This is Jeff Fournier from Thompson House Eatery in Jackson. My wife, Kate, and I own the restaurant. And I think that we were one of the first restaurants to close when the pandemic started. And we took our mask policy really seriously to the point where sometimes guests would not agree and they would get up from their table and didn't want to wear their mask when their server was present and just didn't understand that. It was sort of like, and I think because we're a little bit in vacation land up here, you know, our feeling was that people didn't think that the pandemic was happening up here.
So how have you sort of worked through that, Jeff? And what are your hopes for the upcoming big tourism season?
We have tried to really just, by the time a guest sits at our, in a seat, they have seen our mask protocol in emails and texts with confirming their reservation. They've been greeted at the host stand with the same information. So having a lot of kind of repeat the information repeated often before they sit has been really helpful. And our whole team has been working together to make sure that everyone kind of understands. And I think that overall, people really kind of got on board. But what we're looking to do is just really expand as much outside dining as we can as the weather warms up.
Well, and we're going to talk a little bit more about outside dining later. So, but I'm glad you talked about your staff, Jeff, because I wanted to ask all of you about that. And Nimi, to you first, please, what is your ability to find and keep staff these days? Because we've heard from other hospitality businesses that it's been very hard. I wonder what it's been like for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're very lucky. I have almost the same core staff that has been with me since before the pandemic. That has been around for a few years. But the people that unfortunately we had to furlough for a little bit longer did not come back. And, you know, we're still looking to hire, but that has been very difficult because every restaurant in Portsmouth seems to be desperate for staff at the moment.
Really? So why is that, Nimi?
I wonder if people have either exited the industry. I'm sure a lot of people had to find other work during the pandemic, during the months that most restaurants were closed, or people, I assume that most people just exited.
Wow. So if their restaurant was closed down for a couple months and they weren't sure if it was going to reopen, they just went and found something else. I did see a story in Foster's Daily Democrat about a restaurant owner in your area. He said he started hiring high school students, which he said he would not have done before because of worries about liability. But now he says 4 out of his 6 employees are high schoolers under age 18. So, and he says it's working out great so far. So that's another strategy. How about you, Liz? How's it going with your staff and your ability to hire and keep the people you want?
Well, we've been able to keep the people, most of the people that we want. I think where our situation is very similar to Nimi's is that we still have a nice core, and we're looking to replace a few people that we lost during the furlough. So, and the struggle is real to find the quality staff that we're looking for right now. So, we just keep plugging away, and yeah.
We heard from a couple restaurant workers and owners about the staffing situation. Angela emails, as a restaurant worker myself, the lack of news coverage about restaurant workers' risk has been frustrating. The reality is restaurants are one of the only places people gather in public and take off their masks for long periods of time. And it is absolutely impossible for restaurant workers to socially distance from these patrons. Restaurant workers are all too familiar with being treated poorly. And when we had to all go back to work, we did, despite the risk. It would be great instead if patrons telling us they've been vaccinated, we could tell them that they have been. Angela, thank you for sharing your story. Here's another one from Jack, who says, as a restaurant owner in Gorham, Roadhog Barbecue Swine Dining, Jack, by the way, I ate there. It was delicious. I'm very concerned about our future. Finding employees before COVID was tough. Jack says now it's next to impossible. When the shutdown came, we lost just about everyone. As soon as everyone found out they could make more money, home on unemployment. We were very fortunate to find people who wanted to work and now have had the best staff we have had to date. Just not enough. Finding people to complete our staff is harder than finding chicken teeth. If not for the PPP program, we would not have been able to make it through. He's up in your area, Liz. What do you think? Finding people to complete our staff is harder than finding chicken teeth. What are you doing to find those chicken teeth?
Well, I've hired a recruiter. I mean, for me, I'm in a different situation. I'm in a stage in my career where I want to step back a tiny bit, and I want a very special, two very special people to complete my kitchen. And so I am taking my time and being patient with that, and really actually optimistic about it. But and I think they're out there. I think that they're just, I think they're hesitant to come back. And I think that the person who wrote in and said that people didn't seem to care about the staff, I think is so true. So for us, we have not served inside since this hit in March because our staff doesn't feel safe and we have to follow their lead. And so we're not going to reopen until we can be outside. And so we have to understand how, you know, does it feel dangerous and is this why people aren't coming back?
You've got, from what I understand, a pretty robust takeout part of your business. Has that helped you kind of bump along, Liz?
Well, had a really unique opportunity to do something by pairing with the Northern Forest Center, who has sponsored us in these, and they just let me do whatever idea we wanted to come up with, and we came up with this stack idea. So we do four courses of takeout once a week. And it sells out in 24 minutes. It's
wow.
Kind of the average. And yes, and so each stack serves two people. And this is all we're doing right now at the moment is our Saturday stack. But it's been a great experience and the enthusiasm has been beautiful for it.
Nimi, how are you working with takeout? From what I understand, you know, some restaurants it works, some restaurants it doesn't. You might serve, you know, dishes that really need to be just fresh from the kitchen. So how have you worked around that, Nimi?
Yeah, our food doesn't easily lend itself to takeout by any means. During the months that we were closed last year and a little bit this year, we did special supper clubs where they were three courses and they were meant for takeout, and that worked well and sold fairly well. And since we still do offer takeout with some of our menu, we've tried to rework our menu so at least some items are good for takeout. And we occasionally get takeout orders, but it's not something that we push. Our food just doesn't easily lend itself to it.
Sure, and we've heard from other people who have the same experience. Regarding that email concerning restaurant worker safety, Professor Adams, here's a question that I've always wondered. How much does it help the wait staff, like our emailer, to wear a mask when her customers aren't because they're eating and drinking? Is that mask still helpful for that wait person?
Absolutely. It is both helping the person who wears it and the people that they're in contact with. So originally we thought that it was only protecting those around you if you were wearing the mask and it didn't provide much of any protection to the wearer, but we actually know that's not true, that it does work in both directions now. So yes, absolutely, wait staff should have, you know, a nice fitting, tightly fitting mask. It's all about the seal. And that will be important even when they're interacting with their with the restaurant patrons who are not masked. So absolutely. And I also am very sympathetic to wearing a tight fitting mask for, you know, hours on end. So I know that's hard. And again, we are still encouraging it and, you know, really hoping that we need to get through the next few months as we approach higher levels of vaccination coverage and approach herd immunity, in our communities, but yeah, that mask is going to be absolutely helpful to the wait staff that are wearing it.
Well, coming up after a very short break, we will hear how New Hampshire's capital city is working with its restaurants to expand outdoor dining. We'll talk about that and we'll keep taking your calls. It's been great to hear from you. Our number is 800-892-6477 and our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
I believe in a concept called pay it forward.
Stephen Randall of Northfield recently became a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle.
Because I realized the value that it provided to me personally. And so this is my way of making sure that this news source stays around for everybody.
You can join Steve and pay it forward when you give $100 a month as a member of NHPR's Leadership Circle. Learn more at nhpr.org/leaders.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, changes, hopes, and challenges for New Hampshire restaurants. Exchange listeners, let's hear from you. If you work in this sector, what has the past year been like for you? And what are your expectations for this year? Also, if you like to eat at your local restaurants, how have you been interacting with them? Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 800-892-6477. Our guests for the hour are Nimi Adnani, proprietor of Raleigh Wine Bar and Eatery in Portsmouth. Also, Lisa Adams, a professor of medicine and epidemiology at Dartmouth and co-chair of the college's COVID task force. And Liz Jackson, co-owner of Salt and Libby's in Gorham. And with us now is Carlos Bahia. He's deputy city manager of development in Concord. And Carlos, welcome to The Exchange. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Laura, for having me. Good morning.
So what were the major changes that the city had to make last year, kind of scrambling, as everybody was, to accommodate more outdoor dining?
So we have the good fortune in Concord of having actually a renovated Main Street, which allowed us years ago to provide very wide sidewalks for outdoor dining purposes. So we already were a step ahead to begin with, but you're absolutely correct. The council did scramble to expand that program. And so what we ended up doing is allowing businesses to use some of the bump outs in our sidewalks, as well as to use some of the parking spaces that, unfortunately, due to COVID, were not being used for our retail businesses, for example. And so that program took off pretty quickly. Last year, I believe, between the downtown businesses and allowing also our businesses throughout the community who might have had, for example, private parking lots to put tents in their parking lots or picnic tables, et cetera, I think we had about 40 different restaurants participate in that program. The city council was adamant they didn't want to charge any fees for any of this work, despite the fact that there were city staff trying to coordinate all that and put up safety barriers and sawhorses and things of that nature. So it was successful. And I think if you talk to most restaurateurs, a lot of them said that they really wanted to do it again. And this year, the city council, recognizing again that COVID is still not behind us, as your guests have noted, put the program into place again for the remainder of the season through the middle of November.
Wow, 40 restaurants, that's a lot, Carlos. I mean, Concord's not that big a city.
We have, and you'd be surprised, we actually have quite a few restaurants. In our downtown, the of the 40 that participated last year, there were probably, I'd say, around between 10 to 15 restaurants in the downtown that took advantage of it. So those are the ones you would probably see the more prominent ones.
Sure.
Using the public spaces.
Well, and it's interesting because living in Concord, as I do, I remember the whole, you know, debate over whether Concord should expand the sidewalks downtown, that whole downtown improvement. And some people said, you know, who's going to do outdoor dining? And then lo and behold, 2 years later, a pandemic hits and everybody's doing it. What were some of the toughest issues to resolve, Carlos, last year?
Actually, you know, I'll be frank. I think it worked out pretty well. I think everyone was rowing in the right direction here because the restaurants obviously wanted to do whatever it took to make them stay afloat, and the community and the city council wanted to do that as well. And so we worked really collaboratively with everyone. So there weren't significant obstacles. There were areas that obviously we'd like to improve. If this program were to become more permanent, where we have, for example, dining in the streets on a regular basis, We want to make sure that the safety measures that are in place would be something that's a little bit more rigorous. I think, like you mentioned, we really reacted last year. And that reaction, our goal was to allow restaurants to do business and allow them to generate some revenue and allow customers to enjoy the notion of, you know, I'm going out, I'm not just doing takeout. And so that was the critical factor. And we did provide some modicum of safety measures using some granite blocks that we had already in our downtown, some sawhorses, things like that. But I think if we move forward, we'd want to do something that's a little bit stronger. And the city council is looking at that as well. They've directed us to take a look at what other measures we could implement that might be conducive to still providing an attractive place to eat, but something that's a little bit more, how should I say, stronger in terms of keeping traffic away from the dining area.
Oh, I see. So, you know, in case a driver isn't paying attention, you don't want that car to, you know, plow into people who are eating in a couple newly renovated parking spaces. Is that what you're saying, Carlos?
Right. And also, you know, other communities have used Jersey barriers, and Jersey barriers are obviously, they're fine, but they're not exactly attractive. In Nashville, they've had a great campaign where they've commissioned, I think, an artist to do murals on the Jersey barriers.
Those are those big concrete things?
Yes, exactly. Those big concrete things, right. And, you know, we looked at that, and again, we were concerned about making sure that we didn't create this sort of corridor of, you know, it looked like a construction site. We had been very adamant in redoing our downtown that it was going to be open to all, accessible to all, and that was very important to us. And so we're working on that issue, but we're very thankful to the continued cooperation of our restaurant owners and managers. They've been outstanding.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I was in downtown Manchester, I think 2 weeks ago, and I saw those big concrete Jersey barriers, just as you described, Carlos. And they also, most of them were painted thematically around the restaurant's, you know, particular vibe. For example, in front of the bookery, the bookstore in Manchester, bookstore and cafe, they had pictures of books and cups of coffee. And so people are trying anyway to make those big, not so attractive concrete barriers look attractive. I have some feedback, actually, Carlos, from listeners about how they felt about outdoor dining. BJ wrote on our coronavirus survey, when the weather was good, the outdoor dining in Concord was great, was a creative response to the pandemic. BJ says they must be suffering now. Some restaurants are creative about takeout and special orders or delivering to our door. Deb on the coronavirus survey said, I love that Nashua pitched in and helped the restaurants on Main Street this summer by blocking off a lane in either direction so outdoor dining could be expanded. This helped the restaurants as well on Main Street stay afloat. Many of us are hoping that this will continue next summer because it made the city feel so friendly. So that's some of the feedback that we got. What kind of feedback did you get from Concord residents, Carlos?
We heard a lot of the same things, actually. The community was energized by the notion of again, you know, eating out in the public space. And that's actually one of the things that was critical when we were designing our Main Street several years ago, was we wanted to be very sort of calculated in how we did that, because we know that a community which has a lot of great public spaces that people take advantage of is a community where people want to stop, they want to get out of their cars, they want to frequent the businesses, they want to inject cash into the local economy. And so that was very important. And so people recognized that in terms of there was more focus on that this year. So that was very important to us and to the city council. I also wanted to note, Laura, another measure that the city and the council took last year is they also offered a $15,000 grant program to the restaurants in our community for doing measures, for example, if they installed plexiglass inside their businesses and things like that. That was over the winter, because we were cognizant it's just not about the spring and the summer. We wanted to be able to help them throughout the months where they wouldn't be able to do outdoor dining.
Well, anything else, Carlos, that you want to let our listeners know about, you know, how you as a city official are thinking around the upcoming spring and summer and dining?
Well, I'd encourage everyone to come to Concord and frequent our restaurant. And also, if you've got comments, be they positive or if there's some criticism that you'd like to, you know, send along our way, please share it with us here at the city, because I think we are looking at how to make this program better. And I'm sure we will be having discussions with the city council going forward as to whether they want to continue this in some form or fashion in the future.
Okay. Carlos, it's good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Take care.
That's Carlos Bahia. He's Deputy City Manager of Development in Concord. Again, listeners, our number is 800-892-6477. Join us as we look at all the challenges, changes, and innovations that New Hampshire restaurants have had to make over the past year, what their hopes are for now that the weather's getting warmer. Again, our number is 800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Nimi, to you first, you're in a city, Portsmouth. How have you and the city worked together to provide outdoor dining in, you know, let's face it, space is limited in a city?
Yeah, definitely. We're lucky enough to have kind of two sides of sidewalk outside our restaurant. We did get to expand our outdoor seating. A lot of it was actually working through some state laws because you can't cross. You used to not be able to cross city sidewalk with alcohol, but I think they loosened up on those restrictions with COVID. But Portsmouth has done a great job. They were a little slow to start, but I know a lot of restaurants that have no sidewalk at all, and they put up jersey barriers and taken over parking spots, and the city has worked really nicely with restaurants.
And given your experience, Nimi, with this last year, what might make it easier for you this year? Again, last year, everybody was kind of, you know, learning on the fly.
Yeah, definitely. It was much easier to plan our outdoor seating this year and to make it look prettier. The year before, we just weren't sure how long it was going to last, whether we'd be able to keep the outdoor seating even the entire summer, or what might happen. So we kind of just, you know, made everything work in kind of a makeshift manner. But this year, some planning went into it and already looks so much nicer. And, you know, once it gets warmer with more flowers and plants, I'm sure it'll look even better.
Yeah. Well, and again, when I think about all the changes that you and Liz have had to make and figure out, and, you know, my goodness, you're restaurant owners, you're not epidemiologists. So It's really tough. Liz, you have a large outdoor space that you've transformed. What's been the feedback from customers on that?
Oh, I think it's been life-changing for us. So almost like you almost never want to go back inside. And I'm really excited to bring it up to even a higher level for this summer. Some more flowers and, you know, better tents and chairs and better patios. So, yeah, I mean, we're just looking forward to just taking it even further and making it more lovely. And there was something wonderful about outdoor dining in the sense that people just accepted whatever the temperature was, whatever the moment was. They just were so good-natured. So that was a nice surprise and a pleasure to take care of people in this situation. Yeah.
What about the town of Gorham, Liz? How did you work with them to create this space? Did you need special permits or, you know, anything like that?
Yeah. So we needed some special permits to put our tent up, and the fire chief came by and made sure that everything was safe. You know, Gorham's a very small town, and there aren't a lot of resources like in the cities to help us with things, but I feel like they've been pretty supportive.
Let's go back to our listeners. And Gary's calling from Randolph. Hi, Gary. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking me on.
Sure.
I'd like to just speak to one of the consequences of the governor's recent decision. I recently visited the Jefferson Old Corner store to get a piece of pizza. I like their pizza there. And none of the employees were wearing masks. Not the people making the food, not the cashier, none of them. The governor, by doing away with the mask mandate, has allowed businesses that don't believe in masks to take them off. And I'd just like to hear the epidemiologist and other people speak to that.
Wow, already, Gary, because this just happened on Friday, and you're saying a day or two later, already everybody in this pizza place was not wearing a mask.
Well, it's not a pizza place. It's the old corner store in Jefferson,
sure,
New Hampshire.
Yep.
And they make pizzas, they make sandwiches, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, these people probably don't believe in masks, and he has given them license. Now they own the business, and all the I'm assuming it's the owner and the employees don't believe in masks, so the masks are off.
So as somebody who really likes their pizza, Gary, what are you going to do?
I'm not going to go there anymore. You know, they were not wearing masks when they made the pizza, and I said, okay, you know, I haven't heard that food is vector for COVID. So I took a chance and had one piece of pizza. And, you know, I had my mask on the whole time, but
sure,
none of the employees did.
Wow. Well, Gary, I'm glad you called. And Professor Adams, two questions out of this. One is just, a lot of people have had this question, actually. If a food preparer is not wearing a mask, can that person, you know, transmit COVID on the piece of pizza?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question, and I appreciate Gary raising this. You know, I think our data really don't show that there's transmission through ingestion of the virus. So it really has to get into the airways. That's where the virus settles and starts replicating. So I don't think that so much is the biggest concern. I think the concern that Gary raises is going into that store, there's now maybe perhaps virus circulating in the air in that space. And that to me is the real concern. And I do think that by lifting the mask mandate statewide and the governor saying, oh, this is, he's going to now let individual towns and what have you make their own decisions. I think it potentially sends a wrong message, because now the onus is on, you know, mayors and town managers and, you know, restaurant owners, as we've been hearing, and that makes it more challenging and potentially sets up confrontation. And in some cases, places are going to lose customers, as we just heard from Gary. So I do think that is a concern. I was very pleased as soon as we heard the news from the governor that Hanover's town manager said, just want to let you know, Hanover is going to keep its mask mandate in place.
Do you think, Professor Adams, as an epidemiologist, that the removal of the mask mandate will create higher caseloads here in New Hampshire?
It's certainly possible, I will say. It's certainly not guaranteed, but we do know that masks work. And there was actually a nice article out of the published by the CDC last month showing that mandating masks was associated with a decrease in daily COVID cases and death rates within 20 days of implementation. So again, evidence that mask mandates worked, especially when we were in the peak of the pandemic. Now, not all states that have stopped their mask mandates have seen rises in cases. And so I think there's still some active debate about more when masks are needed in outdoor settings. But I am concerned that, and again, we've only got about 30% of the New Hampshire population fully vaccinated. And again, as you're hearing from Mimi and Liz, they're going to actually have tourists coming from outside of New Hampshire, of course, for the peak tourist season. And again, we just don't know yet what rate of vaccination coverage we will have. And until we get to herd immunity, and we're talking about, you know, tripling what we have now in terms of vaccine coverage, that I think is a concern. And that's why I think encouraging people, and I'm so pleased to hear that both Mimi and Liz are saying that they're going to continue to enforce mask mandates in their establishments.
Let's take another call. This is Gary in Nashua. And Gary, thanks for being with us today. Go ahead.
Hey, Laura, thank you for taking my call.
I really
appreciate your program, because you always show the balance of the two sides to all the issues. And my issue was, I just wanted to explain to the people that are listening that there's another side to the story of the restaurants and the expansion. And that's the fact that there's a lot of non-restaurant businesses and owners that are in all the different downtowns that we speak of. You know, we as a business on Main Street in Nashua realized last year, let me just say, previous to the COVID, you took an imaginary line from the sides to the boundaries of the store that you either rent or own, and then went out to the street. And that's where you had outdoor dining. And then last year, due to COVID, we were all in favor of having restaurants expand outside, because they couldn't have any customers inside. So, for instance, now they're going back. We're probably, by the end of the summer, it'll be 100% inside again, and they want to start thinking about doing this year after year. So we're trying to draw a line in the sand, because basically, with all the barriers they put off in front of our stores, you know, there's a hair salon, a barrier. So in our block, in front of the hair salon, and then the two storefronts for this restaurant, the two storefronts for us, storefront for a jewelry store that's been around, and also a haberdasher and a barbershop. Our store's been around for 121 years. You know, the jewelry store has been around for three generations. The haberdasher's been here since the 1940s and 50s. The barbershop's been there since the 40s and 50s. So we have, you know, we either rent or own our space, and we expect to have parking in front of it. But what they've done is they've not only taken the sidewalk, but also the parking that was there that we're now crowded out with barriers that you can't park. And also they've taken the one of the two lanes of going for traffic. So there's been a lot of backup in traffic. And it's really, and so a lot, you know, so we, as a rule of thumb, get about five or six turns an hour with parking. And there's usually, you know, like five or six parking spots that are normally there. And they're not now. They're, you know, people have to speak blocks away and all that. And so many people, since they started this 2 weeks ago, are complaining about this. So people need to realize that we all, you know, we as owners of properties, and we've been there for 120 years, we have been solid proponents of the restaurants. My wife and I, and a lot of people, at least once a week, and go take out over the winter to support them. I know a lot of the owners. Some of the owners, like even the one next to me, feels like it's excessive because she knows how hard we work year round for over four generations and produce a good product. But this has really crowded us out.
So, Gary, what do you think? And I hear how frustrated you are, and I understand if people can't find parking in front of your business, they may say, nah, never mind. What's the solution? What's the middle ground there?
I think the solution is to go back to the way it originally was when they have 100% of their dining allowed to go inside, which they always had. Anything they do outside is a bonus, but it should really be an imaginary line from the borders of their business right to where the street begins. But I should have, in my store, it's blocked. I have two storefronts. Next to me is a jewelry store. He is blocked off. Then there's a haberdasher. He's blocked off. Then there's a barbershop. They're blocked. All the business that came to those, people can't park. And if you go to the next block, it's also, the next block has one restaurant. It's a coffee shop that's open, you know, maybe 5 hours a day. And they block the whole thing off. There's a bank and there's a mortgage company. It doesn't make sense to be blocking off all this parking for customers that expect to come down and be able to do that. The other thing is, of course, I don't want to go off on a tangent.
Yeah, and Gary, actually, I have to take a very quick station break, but I'm glad you called because, and I'm sorry Carlos Bailly isn't with us because he's more a city official, but after the break, I will ask our guests about this, you know, how do you balance the whole parking for existing businesses versus those restaurants that are, you know, trying to offer outdoor dining for customers who don't feel safe dining indoors. So we will talk about that after a very short break. Thanks a lot for calling, Gary, and we'll be right back. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
I listen to NHPR because it opens up my world.
Peg Hendel of Waterville Valley is a proud member of NHPR's Leadership Circle.
I really value the fair and well-researched and well-balanced information that I get. That's something I just had to support.
You too can join NHPR's growing family of Leadership Circle members when you invest $100 a month into the statewide news service you trust at nhpr.org/leaders.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, the state's top epidemiologists join us to discuss the state's COVID trends and the lifting of restrictions. Send us your questions for them before the show to exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today, we're talking about New Hampshire restaurants and their plans and hopes for the warmer weather. Exchange listeners, join us with your own experiences, either as a restaurant worker or patron. Do you plan to eat inside a restaurant? What changes to restaurants do you hope remain even after the pandemic? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org, or you can give us a call, 800-892-6477. We're talking with Nimi Adnani, proprietor of Raleigh Wine Bar and Eatery in Portsmouth, also Lisa Adams, a professor of medicine and epidemiology at Dartmouth, and Liz Jackson, co-owner of Salt and Libby's in Gorham. And Nimi, to you, because you're also in a city. Now, obviously, you can't address what's happening in Nashua, but boy, we heard the frustration in Gary's voice, you know, longtime businesses who feel they're losing customers because the restaurants have taken over some parking spaces. What are your thoughts around that, Nimi, as a restaurant owner in a city?
Yeah, I mean, in our particular case, we're at a corner and we're not taking up any parking spots, but I do notice that that has happened with a lot of the other restaurants around. That being said, I would say all of last summer, I saw plenty of parking spots that were still open around town. Portsmouth Residents always complain there is no parking, but people just weren't coming out last year. So I mean, in the case of last summer, it really wasn't an issue. There were plenty of parking spots available throughout even the busiest weekends we had. I do wonder what happens this year, but I guess that kind of still remains to be seen.
Well, and I hope that Nashua can work that out, because we have heard from listeners who really liked it, but I definitely hear, you know, how Gary's frustrated and how that's affecting his business. Professor Adams, Gary also mentioned, you know, dining indoors he'd like to see, because it is, again, hurting his business having all these tables and parking spaces taken up. If people are fully vaccinated, can they walk into a restaurant and eat safely indoors, even if there is, you know, COVID circulating in the air?
Sure. I guess I would say it is safer once you're vaccinated. It's hard to say what exactly is safe and versus, you know, unsafe. So I would say certainly if you are fully vaccinated, you are safer eating indoors. And if you're eating with, you know, household members or other fully vaccinated individuals, that helps. What you don't know in a restaurant, of course, is who else is in the restaurant, even, you know, if tables are spread out. So that, I think, is a bit of the concern. Again, we talked about the increased risk with because of ventilation dynamics. So, you know, again, I think you are safer if you are fully vaccinated to choose to dine indoors. I think considering dining during non-peak hours, perhaps, so that, you know, the restaurant's less crowded at that time. But again, I'm also, as I've said, a big fan of takeout and dining outdoors. And again, I would stress wearing your mask at all times, except when you're eating and drinking.
Let's take one more call. This is Jason in Concord. Hi, Jason. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to call and, you know, discuss. So I'm the managing operator of T-Bones in Concord, and I had the pleasure of being the 2020 board chair for the New Hampshire Lodging and Restaurant Association, and, you know, got to work pretty closely on some of the guidelines for the industry. And, you know, we've really sort of heightened our focus on air quality and ventilation, as, you know, it's the science has proven that that's a deciding factor in, you know, low risk versus high risk. And
sure,
some of the, you know, we've invested heavily in air purifiers and studying our HVAC, and the restaurant industry, you know, really has taken it on the chin this past year. And the perception that it's dangerous inside a restaurant isn't really supported by some of the studies that we've done, where, you know, we have full air exchange within 8 to 10 minutes, where most offices or other industries could take hours. And we, you know, we've really kind of looked at the data showing if there's, you know, scientific evidence that restaurants are dangerous, and it's not there.
So you have those big study yet. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, Jason. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say that, you know, there was one study at the onset from China that has kind of been pointed to over and over again. But besides that, there's just, you know, there have been some states that have put out contact tracing data on where people are getting it. And, you know, it's typically 75% to 80% in homes or from private gatherings outside of public restaurants. And I think it's 1% or 2% in some, you know, in most of these states that are actually, they're tracing back to a restaurant gathering.
And Jason, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're running out of time, so I apologize for that. Real quick, though, you guys put up tents last year, too. You going to do that again this year?
We do. We have them up at all of our locations, and we're ready for a full summer. You know, we know outside dining is not just, you know, it's always been a great thing for us, and it's where more people are comfortable, and that's great, and we're hoping to be able to provide all the space possible.
Okay. I'll let you go, Jason. Yeah, I do apologize for that. Thank you very much for calling in. And Professor Adams, real quickly, you know, the air circulation, the air exchanges, we hear from the airlines, you know, we exchange it every 3 minutes. So what about that?
Yeah, no, again, I think that that's really critical. And having air purifiers is a great addition. And having, you know, frequent air exchanges is going to keep everyone in that space safer. So again, that's great to hear. But I don't know if everyone's able to achieve those kinds of air exchange, levels. And so that, you know, again, that's something that I think is great when places can do it, but recognizing not every restaurant is able to achieve that frequency of air exchange is an issue again. So that's, again, I'm just so excited that we are expecting warmer weather and again, can be looking forward to more outdoor dining, and so pleased to hear that that seems to be something that's gonna stay.
And Nimi and Liz, and I apologize for asking you to be quick on this, but what changes, Liz, that you've made are you going to stick with once this, you know, whole thing is maybe behind us?
Well, absolutely. The outside dining has been such a sweet bonus. So we will stay with that. And we will stay with anything that we need to stay with to be cautious and to keep our guests and staff safe.
And I've also noticed you and Nimi really making great use of your Facebook pages, your websites to connect with customers more. How about you, Nimi? What are you going to keep even once this is perhaps, hopefully, behind us?
Yeah, I mean, definitely we had the outdoor seating before, but I think keeping it longer into the season when it gets a little cooler, just with all the extra heaters we have now, we get to keep it out longer, which is wonderful. And we did start a wine club, which is doing well. So we're definitely going to keep that going.
Some of those online connections with customers, even when they don't come into the restaurant. It's been great to talk to all of you. We could have talked a lot longer. Nimi, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me on, Laura. Such a pleasure to chat with everyone.
That's Nimi Adnani, proprietor of Raleigh Wine Bar and Eatery in Portsmouth. Liz, thank you as well. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you so much.
That's Liz Jackson, co-owner of Salt and Libby's in Gorham. And Professor Adams, thanks for helping us out. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Laura.
That's Lisa Adams, Associate Dean for Global Health, a professor of medicine and epidemiology at Dartmouth, and co-chair of the college's COVID Task Force. Today's show was produced by Exchange producer Jane Vaughn. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.